Hello, welcome to another Ethical Corporation podcast with me, Paul French, the China editor in Shanghai. This time I'm in the leafy western suburbs of the city at East China Normal University, where the CIEE, the Council on International Educational Exchange, has its offices, an American outfit that brings over various people. I've been here before and spoken to American school teachers coming on visits to China and young people as well. And one of their faculty members is John Tai. And John is with me today. And John's specialization is on the NGO sector here in China. So what I thought we'd do, because I'm always writing things and mentioning NGOs and gongos and the pluses and the minuses for these and the trouble they sometimes get into, is we would do a kind of dummies guide, a sort of O-level, what do they call it in America, 101 to NGOs in China. And John could talk us through the basics, and that might be useful. So John, thanks a lot for coming and being instructional.
Well, thank you, and I hope I can be of help.
First of all, can you tell us what these gongos that we hear about, G-O-N-G-Os, what is a gongo and how is that different from an NGO?
A gongo is, as the acronym, or if you spell it out, says, government-organized, non-governmental organization. It sounds very oxymoronic. The reality is that you're dealing with organizations that are government-sponsored, but the government treats them as if they're non-profit organizations. Examples, All China Women's Federation, these are clearly corporatist organizations. An even more pathological one that most people say is really a problem is such as the All China Labor Union.
Right. One trade union, which
we've
written about.
The one trade union that monopolizes the entire sector. So these are very corporate structures. Other things, of course, could be the Red Cross Society of China and things in the China Charities Federation.
Right.
So these are ones who are subsidized, created, staffed by Chinese government officials.
Okay, now we do have NGOs here, both Chinese NGOs and both Chinese arms of international NGOs. Is there a difference in the way that those operate?
Well, clearly the local NGOs are smaller in scale. And we're talking mainly about grassroots, the Chinese would call them grassroots NGOs,
Cao Genxin,
and they're smaller in scale. Many of them are essentially like mom and pop shop, and most of them receive considerable funding from international sources, and including branches of these international NGOs that you talk about.
Right.
And when we talk about grassroots NGOs, we're really talking about the ones who are not subsidized by the state, who are created outside the framework. So the interesting thing is that they have no political connection, or if they do, it exists on a very personal individual level, and it does not affect their autonomy in terms of governance.
Okay. Now, would I be right in thinking that some of these, there's a growth of these type of grassroots NGOs, and some of them are concerned citizens, but some of them are also almost crossing over to philanthropy. We're seeing a lot of Chinese businessmen. Are they essentially setting up their own grassroots NGOs as philanthropists almost?
Yeah, I do not see a whole lot in terms of the philanthropists or these wealthy business people. A big name is Chen Guangbiao, the guy who basically decides to just give out everything, or he pledged that he would give everything out. We don't see them necessarily creating organizations, but they certainly do a lot of funding, and they would contribute to they would contribute to projects, to programs, do a lot of these very, in many ways, very traditional type of philanthropy in which they would go down. Do relief effort, and maybe to some extent even work with pseudo-government, or gongos, if you will.
Okay.
But not them directly, it would seem. But most of the NGOs are created by more like what we consider probably middle-class people.
Right.
Intellectuals,
yeah.
Faculty members, lawyers, or even middle-ranking government officials or middle-ranking officials of gongos.
Yeah, I've come across some of these.
Yeah. And so most of this, what we're talking, it's still very much a highly, it's, I wouldn't use, maybe not the word elitist, but clearly they are not ordinary peasants who are creating these organizations.
Okay, now in terms of, you know, a foreign brand, say let's take any well-known Western brand that has a corporate responsibility program that wants to get involved in things in China. Possibly they're involved around the world with the big names as we know them, the Oxfams, the World Wildlife Funds. They may have special areas that they work in. They want to do things in China. what are the pros and cons for a Western company of coming in and getting involved with a Gongo versus a grassroots NGO? You know, there must be pluses and minuses to working with one or the other.
Yes, there are. I think if you work with Gongo, there are some obvious pluses. One is that if you work with them, you provide them money, then you will be able to be very good with your brand marketing, especially here locally in China. These organizations are able to host public activities and public events, and as a commercial sponsor, you also get your name out there. To some extent, Gongos certainly also have the capacity that many local grassroots NGOs, or most local grassroots, simply do not have. Again, the All China Women's Federation, the corporate structure with its extensive network from the national level down to the local level.
Well, the Chinese Red Cross, which we wouldn't in other countries necessarily think of as being very government-linked.
Yes, but the Red Cross Society of China is definitely a state enterprise, if you will. And certainly being associated with that allows, you know, definite benefits in terms of marketing. And you can probably reliably think that most of them are able to actually use you, apply the things that you provide and use them. The downside of that, of course, is that there has been a lot of, you know, suspicion about just exactly what these organizations do with your money, the money that's provided. And it came out in the 2008 Sichuan earthquake about the Red Cross Foundation, you know.
Right.
And, you know, you give them the money, they never go into place, what's going on, it's a delay. And so there's always that, and I think it's tinged with the elements of distrust of, or traditional distrust of the Chinese authorities.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about this before, and one possibility is also that if somehow you're working with the Chinese authorities, these Gongos, and the word get out back home, someone is willing to say something about it, and back home in Europe, in the United States, they don't know very much, they think it's just all part of the government. It may come back and say that, what are you doing? You're using money, contributing to an authoritarian regime. Working with the NGO certainly will not have that effect.
Right.
People think it's virtuous, it's autonomous, it's grassroots, benign, it really can do the work down there. But that's where the problem is. I think many of the Chinese NGOs are very small in scale, and they have very limited capacity. There are NGOs, I would say most NGOs probably don't even know, are not even known by the constituents they allegedly serve. And I've come across quite a lot of these things. It's not to say that they don't mean well or they don't want to do it. It's just they're very limited in terms of their capacity. And one of the issues is that they do not. Most of the money comes from international sources, mainly from NGOs outside China. They do not get support from the state. They do not get support from society in terms of charities and philanthropy, in large part because especially many of them are not properly registered or registered at all. They can't hold public events for fundraising. So there are a lot of these impediments for a multinational who want to work with the NGO. On the other hand, it looks good if you're able to get this back and say you work with a particular NGO, and in many ways, politically speaking, back home, it looks very well. Politically speaking, in China, it may not necessarily be that great.
Yeah, I mean, I always think when people work with a grassroots NGO, that's when the CEO of the Western company gets the shot, you know, of handing out blankets or digging a water well or something, you know. But when you work with a Gongo, you just get a picture of you and a bunch of, you know, dyed hair communists or something, right? And that doesn't always exactly what you want to put in your annual report. Right?
But you can be certainly assured that the Gongos will certainly make use of that image.
They will certainly use that image, yeah. Now, look, is this all fixed? I mean, this is a period we're at the moment, and really the earthquake is always seen as the break point. We have Gongos, we have grassroots NGOs, we have foreign NGOs who've had a hard time. I think of Oxfam with its migrant worker schools that had trouble. And is this the state of play as it's going to stay, or is this a fluid situation and grassroots ones can become Gongos and Gongos are looking to break away and be more independent? I mean, what's the situation?
Well, I think definitely what you see is that a growth in number of these grassroots NGOs. And part of it is because it's so small in scale, and as long as and it's so reliant and dependent on project funding. And such that, so if they're able to secure sources, then you can easily create an NGO. The question is whether they last. Sustainability is a big problem. And I think you may...
And they're often built around individuals as well, which is always
built
a
around
slight risk.
Yes, right. Well, they're small, they're built around individual. The resources that we talk about really is down at the individual level.
Yeah.
It's not an organizational resource. So in many ways, there's those issues related. But they're definitely growing. I mean, the numbers are just keep coming up. Gongos are pretty much, as long as the current political system exists, I think these corporate structures are not going to be changed. The question, of course, as you rightly pointed out, is whether or not they're going to become more autonomous and then truly be social, organizational, or as a more equitable social bridge between the state and society. A lot of people have spent a lot of ink to try to figure this out. Most of them have to come to the conclusion that it varies by places. Certainly, for example, the labor union has not been that great, but the All China Women's Federation, on the other hand, has been on the other side of the spectrum, right? I think it's very much a fluid situation, though. I think we don't really know. I think, for example, the Chinese government has been from what I understand, based on my interviews, have looked very hard for a long, long time at trying to come up with a much better regulatory framework for managing NGO activities. One of the key problems that was expressed to me by a government official was that they simply don't know what the state of play is in China, period. Mm. Nobody, including the NGO specialist in China, can't tell them
what is happening. So yet again, we find ourselves in a gray area in China, as we always do in business and politics and just about everything.
Yeah.
John, thanks a lot. That's a great introduction to Gonggas. Hopefully you'll let us come out here again to ECNU and CIE and have a chat about something, you know, in more depth about some of the work that different organisations are doing and the problems they encounter and the successes they're having. But thanks a lot for that introduction. That's very useful.
Thank you.